top story tonight, they're calling it Bethlehem Mayhem.
Shepherds in the remote region south of Jerusalem took to social media overnight with reports of a type of UFO.
Are you seeing this? Hearing this? This angel is speaking.
We have seen a star, and it's been foretold that a child has been born, a king of the Jews.
Fake news. Fake news. I'm not surprised to hear that from you. Your network is very unpopular.
Just give us some room. She's about to have a baby.
Go back to where you belong. We don't need any more babies born here.
You expect us to believe that God is the father of your child?
Yes.
More fake news. I should have you arrested and your head chopped off.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God!
Previously on Top Story Tonight, Jesus, the Christmas episodes.
As we've been reporting, Caesar has ordered the census. Why? Caesar needs to get a better handle on how many people live in Judea, who's paying taxes, and who isn't.
There's a particular crush around the little town of Bethlehem.
Hey, we're TMZ. Who are you?
I'm, Joseph.
Is that your wife?
Something like that. She's my betrothed.
Get out of here!
So, Mary, who is the father?
My Lord Jehovah.
You mean God, as in God?
Yes.
Honey, I can't get the FaceTime thingy to work with Mary.
Hit the video button.
Hit the what?
I'm Jane Wells, and now a star is born.
Hey now, a good Dies Martis to ya. Also known as Tuesday if you don't speak Latin. Hey, crazy week here in Bethlehem, and it's about to get even crazier. Tonight, this station, KBeth, is throwing a census party. Woohoo! Party! Come on down to the Agora for 3 hours of rock and roll, baby. Bands include the Maccabee Beatles, or as I like to call them, the Maccabeatles. And a brand new band out of Britain called the Rolling Stones. I like its energetic young lead singer, Mick Jagger, and guitarist Keith Richards party so hard. I'm not sure he's gonna live past 30. We'll see you there.
Welcome to the Messiah Podcast, brought to you by our sponsor, Zippy Recruiter. Need a manager to oversee aqueduct construction or looking for an HR professional to handle your gladiators? Zippy Recruiter is the number one choice to fill your needs. I'm Dr. Luke, your host, an investigative journalist with a medical background. As you guys know, I've been fascinated with the predictions about the so-called Messiah, the King who will save us all. The prophet Isaiah has given us a few potential clues. Quote, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God." Now, that's interesting. Mighty God. Let me bring in our political panel to discuss Saul Ben Abraham of the Zionist Uprising newsletter and Julia Antonius, Roman attaché to King Herod. Folks, thanks for joining me.
Great to be here.
It's good to be here.
Saul, let me start with you. The Messiah as a child king. Really?
I know it sounds weird, but the sooner he grows up, the sooner he can get rid of Rome.
Julia, Caesar and the Herod family would not approve. Am I right about that?
Well, they're not too worried. A child versus Rome, not really a fair fight.
I had always figured the Messiah would just kind of show up, you know, fully formed, leading a heavenly army, but a kid will do.
But Isaiah also predicts it doesn't end well for this child.
Exactly. He, quote, "will be pierced for our transgressions." Pierced. Boom. Done.
Jewish lives matter.
No one matters but Caesar. And Herod, of course.
Herod can go to hell.
Careful.
But listen, you two, now my question is, where will this child be born? Jerusalem seems like a natural choice.
Bethlehem.
Where?
Bethlehem what?
Ham, Bethlehem. It's a little town south of Jerusalem. David was born there. Even the prophet Micah writes, "Bethlehem, from you shall come forth for me one who is to be a ruler in Israel."
I call BS. Herod is your king, thanks to Caesar, but he is not from Bethlehem.
Herod is a joke.
Saul, Do you want to live until the weekend? I mean, seriously, I've got a cross with your name on it.
Hey, guys, focus. Okay. If a child king is to be born in Bethlehem, how will we know when that happens? Saul?
How would I know? We've been waiting a long time.
Oh, guess I better start checking at Messiah on Twitter for updates.
Let's put a pin in that for now. Coming up, we take a closer look at crucifixion from a medical perspective, to break or not to break the knees. We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Jane Wells again, producer of the podcast, fast-forwarding to the 21st century for a few minutes. Once again, we're going to step back from news coverage in ancient Judea to talk to real people who can provide some context of that era. This time, I'm asking a very basic question. Was Jesus real? Most of the story of Jesus is told in the first four books of the New Testament of the Christian Bible, the so-called Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, each telling the story of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. When were these stories written? No one knows. The writers don't tell us. They don't even tell us their names. Maybe these accounts were first shared orally before people eventually wrote them down, and at some point attached names of authors. We just don't know. Most biblical historians believe the Gospels were written around 30 to 50 years after Jesus was crucified, as the church was starting to grow. They were probably never written to be part of a collection. In fact, they would not be combined into a new Bible, a New Testament, for at least 300 years. Some argue the entire story of Jesus is made up, that he never existed. I mean, we only have four versions of his life, right?
Everybody wants to bag on Scripture. You've got 10 copies of Caesar's Gallic Wars. I think it's 10. You have 400 some odd copies of Homer's Iliad. You have over 25,000 parts and whole manuscripts of the New Testament alone.
That's Neil Saavedra of the nationally syndicated radio program, The Jesus Christ Show. Saavedra says the Gospels are held to a different standard than other ancient writings.
Is it real?
Is it real? All that stuff's important, but we don't ask those same questions about other things. 10 copies? Fine. That's what happened. That was history. 400 copies, fine, he wrote it, that's the thing we get. But it's because it asks something different from us. So it says, don't just know this information. Use this information, be accountable to this information. And the minute it tells us we have got to be accountable, the minute it says thou shall or thou shall not, we go, I don't know, maybe it's not true. It's like, because now we're accountable. Now we have to, okay, we have to abide by it.
But is the Bible the only surviving recollection of a man named Jesus? No. And we will tell you about these other accounts shortly, but right now. A bunch of nobodies watching sheep one night 2,000 years ago are about to go viral on Instagram.
Top story tonight, they're calling it Bethlehem Mayhem.
Shepherds in the remote region south of Jerusalem took to social media overnight with reports of a type of UFO.
These are videos posted on the Instagram account of a shepherd claiming a new king has been born.
I was just dozing off and this angel woke me up. Can you see it?
What the?
I know. It's so bright.
Oh, Lord, I'm so sorry for falling asleep on the job.
Hey, me too. I'm sorry for it. Shut up. It's about to speak. Okay, I'm back. Are you seeing this? Hearing this? This angel is speaking. We shouldn't be afraid. What? Good news? A savior is born? Guys, are you hearing this?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Where? Bethlehem? Guys, anyone know how to get there?
Yep.
Oh, I hate this new phone. Anyone know how I can save these stories permanently to my timeline?
Screw that! We gotta get to Bethlehem, dude!
No, I have to save these. No one will believe us. The angel said, you're all seeing this, right? He said we'd find the baby wrapped in rags in a feeding trough, which sounds crazy, but he's an angel.
Wait. There's more of them. More!
God, oh my God, oh my God!
Wow, they're singing. Oh, it's beautiful. You're hearing this? They're singing glory to God in the highest and wishing peace on earth and goodness for all of us. Oh. Okay, guys. We're gonna have to leave the sheep.
We can't leave the sheep.
I don't care. I gotta see this kid.
That's all we have so far. We have reporters heading to Bethlehem as we speak.
Drew, sorry to interrupt. This just in. The shepherds posted photos online moments ago. I have not seen these yet. Let's bring them up. Oh, wow.
Is that a barn? Blandis, are they in a barn?
Hey, wait a minute, Drusilla. Isn't that the couple from Nazareth that TMZ was hounding? Could that girl really be mother to a king?
Bland, that kind of talk will get you killed.
Coming up next, our beloved King Herod closes the border with Galilee while Rome puts a new citizenship question on the census. We report, you are not allowed to decide anything.
It's Jane again. So Jesus is born, but the Christmas story does not end there, and we will return to it shortly, and you will meet the great villain of the story. It's actually my favorite part, sorry. But as I said earlier, we know Jesus' life is detailed in the four Gospels. Did anyone else mention him in other writings 2 millennia ago?
Yeah, we have basically 3 sources outside the Gospels that name Jesus as a significant person.
That's Dr. Warren Carter of Phillips Theological Seminary.
One of the first is Tacitus, writing in the early 2nd century.
Tacitus was a Roman senator and one of Rome's greatest historians.
He links the followers of Jesus with the great fire of Rome in the 60s, associated with Nero. You know, did Nero actually set the fire himself, and did he blame the Christians? Whatever.
The whole bit about Nero fiddled while Rome burned? Rome did burn in 64 AD, about 30 years after Jesus was crucified, and most of the city was destroyed. Emperor Nero blamed Christians because they kept talking about God returning and the end of the world. Yeah, in just 30 years, Christianity had made it from Jerusalem to Rome. People, this is before broadband. Nero had Christians covered in animal skins and thrown to the dogs to be torn apart. He burned them alive. He nailed them to crosses. They were considered superstitious, maybe even dangerous.
But Tacitus mentions these followers of Jesus, who was executed by Pilate, and he has a sort of a nasty, snippy little comment about the superstition has spread from Judea to Rome. Which is a pretty nasty, snippy, snide comment. But his comment is interesting because it identifies believers in Rome, and it indicates that he, as an elite writer, is aware of this group somehow.
Warren Carter says the second mention of Jesus comes from a guy named Pliny the Younger, or Pliny, if you like Northern California craft beer. He was sent by Emperor Trajan to govern the area we now call Turkey. In the early 2nd century, Pliny writes to Trajan for legal advice on how to deal with Christians living in his area who refuse to worship Roman gods. Pliny is conflicted about killing or torturing believers of this new faith based on anonymous or unfounded accusations.
So he writes this letter to the Emperor Trajan saying, boss, what do I do? And in the letter, he identifies these Christians as doing 2 things. They gather to worship Christ, and they have made promises to live in particularly virtuous ways.
The third and final person to mention Jesus is Josephus. He was a very famous Jewish historian of the first century who started out helping lead a rebellion against Rome. But after nearly all of the men under his command killed themselves rather than surrender to the Romans, Josephus surrenders to the Romans. He ends up a trusted part of the emperor's court and writes extensively about the history of the Jewish people.
So he's got a couple of references to Jesus, and there's a great big debate among scholars as to whether these references are genuine, whether Josephus actually included all of what is said there, or whether somebody else subsequently, some sort of Christian scribe, added all or some of the Commons.
In one writing, Josephus refers to James, the brother of Jesus. Now, James is presumably the son of Mary and Joseph. They allegedly had children after Jesus was born, though some Christians believe Mary remained a virgin her whole life. So James might have been Joseph's son from a previous marriage, or maybe he was more like a cousin. I don't know. All we know is he is always referred to as Jesus's brother, including by Josephus. When writing about James, Josephus refers to Jesus as the Messiah. Some suggest the Messiah part was added later by someone else, but there's no proof one way or the other. Then, in the second reference, Josephus calls Jesus a wise man who did good things and was crucified.
But in the middle of all of that, when Josephus describes him as a wise man, we've got another little clause, if he can be called a man. Did Josephus add that, or did a Christian scribe some centuries later? Was that added subsequently to edit the text? And it's just very hard to know. Sometimes it's very easy with ancient documents to see where there's been an editing. But with Josephus, it's a little more difficult.
So were these early Christians following someone who never existed? If so, they often paid a very heavy price for it. New Testament scholar Bart Ehrman is famous for his many books on early Christianity, arguing Jesus was not the Messiah, not the Son of God. But he also wrote that based on the totality of the evidence, quote, the reality is that whatever else you may think about Jesus, he certainly did exist. But was he divine? Let's get to the temple.
Welcome to Temple Radio, 6 AD on the AM dial. I'm Rabbi Aaron. An unusual disruption here today. 33 days after the hubbub in Bethlehem, with shepherds claiming angels told them a Savior was born in a barn, a newborn who we believe is the same baby came here this morning to the temple for the purification rites according to Jewish law. That's when all hell, forgive me, all hell broke loose. With me is the baby's father, Joseph. Joseph, mazel tov.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Tell us about this little guy who's creating such a stir.
My wife Mary and I are calling him Jesus.
Uh-huh. Why?
He's the Word of God made flesh.
The what? Made what? Wait, a man is grabbing the baby. Sir, what are you doing?
Sovereign Lord, as you have promised, you may now dismiss your servant in peace, for I have seen your salvation.
Who are you?
I am Simeon, and I have been promised by God that I would live long enough to see the salvation of Israel.
Simeon, are you suggesting that
this child is destined to cause the falling and rising of many in Israel?
This child is the redemption of us all.
He will be a sign many will speak against, revealing the thoughts of many hearts. And you, his mother, a sword will pierce your soul too.
Mary, we need to get going.
Wait, Joseph, wait.
We will come back, Mary. The King of the Jews must be king here. But for now, let's go to Egypt until things die down.
King Herod,
King Herod,
King Herod,
this way,
King Herod,
guys, come on. This is a photo op only, okay? No questions. Let's try something new. Let's have a nice day today, okay? No questions. This is just a photo op, okay? I'm just out here to smile.
But King Herod, why are you killing so many Jews?
Hey, wait a minute. That's a nasty question. That's a leading question. You know that I only kill bad guys.
Some people are calling you Caesar's puppet.
Who said that? Who said that? No, listen. Who said that? Look at everything I've done for you people. I've made Jerusalem great again. I've built roads, aqueducts, theaters. I even rebuilt the temple in Jerusalem better than ever. It's never been so solid. It's never been so much of a temple. And I made Rome pay for it.
No, you didn't. We paid for it with our taxes.
I made Rome pay for it, just like I promised. I built Caesarea, right? The first artificial deep water port. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful port. There's never been a port more beautiful. We now compete with those Egyptians in Alexandria for ocean-bound trade. I've made Jerusalem one of the most important cities of the East. The economy has never been better. In the history of economies of any city, of any country, on any planet, our economy has never been better, and it's never been better because of me.
But the Romans made you king. We didn't choose you, and they slaughtered our people to put you on the throne.
Excuse me? Who stopped that slaughter? I paid a fortune in bribes to stop the Romans from killing all of you so there would even be a Jerusalem, okay? So let's have a positive story.
Now you're killing us with taxes.
I'll kill you for real if you don't shut up. When times are tough, you know me. I lower taxes until the rains come.
But you're not even a Jew.
Fake news. Fake news. I'm not surprised to hear that from you. Your network is very unpopular. My family converted to Judaism 2 generations ago. I'm very observant. You should observe me being observant. You don't give me enough credit for that. It's about time I have some positive press here.
Speaking of your family, you've executed so many of them. The wife you love more than any of your other wives, she's now dead, along with some of your sons.
It's not easy being king. Everyone wants the crown. Everyone's plotting to knock me off. I can't trust anybody. They're all out to get me.
Critics say you're paranoid, demented. Is it true you suffer from severe physical and mental pain?
More fake news. Any more fake news and I'm going to take that tongue of yours right
King
out.
King Herod!
I swear, you people, you're worse than Cleopatra. I hated that queen. But her efforts to turn Mark Antony against me backfired, and now they're both dead. I am not winning.
King Herod!
Oh, shut up, or I'll have you all beheaded. Now, calm down a minute. The reason we're here today is because I'm very honored to welcome some visitors from the East. 3 magi. Wise men who read the stars. Gentlemen, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, King Herod.
Thank you, Your Highness.
So, what can I do for you?
We have seen a star, and it's been foretold that a child has been born, a king of the Jews.
I'm king of the Jews.
So we hear, yes. But we were hoping you could point us in the right direction.
Which direction would that be?
Antipater,
Antipater. Come here. Son, what are they talking about?
Dad, the priests have been saying the prophets promised a ruler would come from Bethlehem.
Bethlehem? You gotta be kidding me. What a joke. The place is for losers.
David City.
Gentlemen, looks like Bethlehem is where you need to go.
Thank you, Your Highness. We have brought gifts for the new king. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh.
Myrrh? Blech. Look, I don't know anything about a star or any king. But you say this king is a baby?
Yes. If you could please point us in the direction of Bethlehem, we will leave you to your work.
Thank you. But I only ask one thing. I'm so excited about this news. It's huge. It's huge news, okay? Please let me know when you've found the baby. I'd love to hear all about it. Deal?
Deal. Okay.
Well then, have a safe trip. It's been great meeting you. Bethlehem is that way. Thank you so much for coming.
King Herod!
One more question! Antipater, get over here. This is not good. We cannot have some baby threatening the throne.
I know, Dad.
I've worked too hard, killed too many people, spent too much money. We need to nip this in the bud.
I know.
Here's what I need you to do. Send a couple of guys, to follow those magi. Find where they go and murder every boy under the age of two in Bethlehem. And the surrounding area, too, just to be safe.
Do what?
Why do I always have to repeat myself with you?
But...
Kill the male babies. Kill them all.
Oh, crap. Dad, your mic's still hot.
King Herod!
King Herod! King Herod!
We're back in the 21st century. Herod, how great is that guy? Let's spend a few minutes giving you the amazing backstory of Herod the Great.
Herod, the so-called Great, right? I mean, that tells you something immediately when you start nicknaming yourself the Great.
Herod had been appointed king by the Roman Senate, a rare title. But he helps out Rome a lot, gives Rome a lot of money, fights for it, supplies troops, builds a lot of things for Rome. Herod even saves the ancient Olympic Games from financial ruin and is named its president for life. He is a brutal, paranoid killer, fearless in battle, and smart. He eventually becomes a good friend of Mark Antony, whose girlfriend Cleopatra hates him. And when Octavian defeats Antony and Cleopatra in 30 BC, leading them to commit suicide, Dr. Warren Carter says Herod is afraid that Octavian, who will become Caesar Augustus, may come for him next.
So Herod has an OMG moment, and he writes Augustus Octavian a letter saying, oops, sorry, backed the wrong horse in that race. So yes, you could throw me out of power, but here's something to think about. Think about not just the person to whom I gave support, your enemy Antony, but think about the quality of the support I gave. Think about how loyal I am. And if you'd give me another chance as ruler of Judea, I'll be the most loyal, devoted ruler, very interested in your interests, spreading your interests that you could ever imagine. And Augustus says, okay, that sounds like a deal.
So Augustus keeps Herod in power. As historian Norman Gelb writes in his book, Herod the Great, Statesman, Visionary, Tyrant, quote, Herod saw the Roman Empire coming, so he decided to get out in front of it and help Augustus lead the parade. But Herod is not as popular back home as he is in Rome. He exacts heavy taxes. The Jews do not consider him a legitimate king, that he is, at best, half-Jewish. His father's family were wealthy landowners from a neighboring territory who converted to Judaism two generations earlier after a military defeat. Julius Caesar made Herod's family Roman citizens, which did not score points with Herod's Jewish subjects who hated Rome. He becomes king in more than name only when Rome installs him on the throne after a bloody slaughter which decimates Jerusalem. Herod then kills several members of his own family as he obsesses over plots, real or imagined. Everything he does is on a grand bloody scale. In fact, in Shakespeare's Hamlet, the Danish prince advises a troupe of touring actors not to, quote, out Herod Herod, meaning don't go over the top. But Herod the Great was also a great builder. He rebuilds the temple in Jerusalem. He builds a deep seaport in Caesarea, named after Caesar, creating a trading stop to rival Alexandria in Egypt. He makes Judea an important trading center. He's kind of a big deal. I mean, really, someone should do a movie on this guy. And then he meets the three wise men who were asking Herod for directions. Yeah, I know, men asking for directions.
Ah, the Magi, yes. We often refer to them as the wise men, but I think that's a terribly misleading title for them because they really, really do ask one of the dumbest questions ever when they turn up in Jerusalem and ask, where is the one born king of the Jews? And they don't mean King Herod.
So, according to the Gospel of Matthew, a few magi, perhaps three based on the three gifts mentioned of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, they come to see Herod, saying a star is leading them to the place where the king of the Jews has been born. They need help finding Bethlehem, and Herod helps them, then orders the destruction of any potential threat to his throne.
And using his spies and using his allies and using murderous violence, he tries to take Jesus out by slaughtering the kids 2 years old and under in the region of Bethlehem. So that's all we hear about him in Matthew's gospel. And you'd think he was the biggest thug that ever lived as a terrible, terrible human being. Nobody's interested in defending him or doing revisionist history on him, but the Herod of history was a whole lot more complicated than that.
And how does it all end for Herod the Great? Well, prepare yourself, it's not good. He dies a painful, humiliating death. Norman Gelb writes that Herod's final days describe a king in constant pain with ulcerated bowels, a transparent liquor settling about his feet, his private parts putrefying and producing worms, perhaps maggots. He has convulsions all over his body, and he has difficulty breathing, quote, which was very loathsome on account of the stench of his breath. 5 days before he dies, in one last act of family intrigue, Herod orders the murder of his oldest son and heir, leaving his younger sons to rule the region. He also orders a large-scale massacre to commence when he dies so that people will not cheer his passing, but be filled with grief. Fortunately, that final wish was not carried out. But the most famous story about Herod the Great is the story of the slaughter of baby boys in and around Bethlehem after he learns a new king has been born. The story only appears in the Gospel of Matthew, nowhere else. Did it happen? Well, based on the king's record, Neil Saavedra says it is something Herod the Great would do.
I call him Herod the He's okay.
Top story tonight, heartbreak and outrage around Bethlehem as mothers are distraught over the mysterious murders of their baby boys.
No one knows how the children, all males under the age of 2, perished.
Some are blaming the Romans, which of course is outrageous and impossible. Our divine Caesar has no need for this.
But if he did, no doubt public opinion polls would support him.
Others suggest it's a work of King Herod, but Herod once again took to Twitter before dawn, calling these rumors fake news, suggesting the real culprits may have been 3 so-called magi last seen in the vicinity.
Police are now referring to them as the 3 wise guys.
So the Christmas story ends. Jesus and his parents escape safely to Egypt. Egypt again, and a baby being saved. The parallels to Moses are hard to miss. But what does it all mean?
I had a guy one time when I was giving a lecture come up to the audience podium and say, "Do you really believe that God sent his son, who's technically himself, down to earth and do this whole thing?" And I said, "Well, first of all, sir, I appreciate you being bold and taking the time to come up and make the statement. However, anything you say like that, in that tone, sounds a little silly. Do you really believe, sir, that a bowl of magical soup that came from nothing made a fish a bird, and then a bird a mammal, and then a mammal into a human? But it took gazillions of years." Everybody laughed because, I mean, yes, you can, you want to play reductionism, we can all do it. But to me, there's a thumbprint. You can see it. You can taste it. There's something magical about life that's different than just we're here, let's party. The Christmas story is the story of the building of a bridge between man and God. Ultimately, God saw that there was no way man was going to find that path. I think it is God saying, "I know you can't do it on your own. I'm going to make a way to pay for it. It will cost me, it will cost you, but together we'll build that bridge and reunite the ultimate family, the creation with the Creator."
Lisa Fields of the Jude 3 Project points to one aspect in particular about the birth of Jesus.
The fact that he was born in a manger, the humility he took on for humanity that he created, I think sticks with me. It always is a challenge for me to, no matter what I achieve, to remain humble, because if God himself, who created, could subject himself to his own humanity, it's a humbling thing. In this world, there is no other faith where God comes to earth, takes on flesh, lives among us, and then dies so that we can be reconciled back to him.
That death happens decades later, after Jesus emerges around the age of 30 as a compelling teacher, challenging the perceived order of everything, demanding that people think different, live different, love different. preaching an upside-down power structure where the last shall be first and the first last.
And of course, when you launch such a challenge, those in power with wealth and status and power are not going to say, oh yeah, thanks very much, we didn't think of doing it that way, so let's try it. The empire always strikes back.
Tune in this spring when the empire does strike back in Top Story Tonight, Easter. Thank you for listening to this episode of Top Story Tonight, Jesus, the Christmas Story. This podcast is written and produced by me, Jane Wells, with support from producers John Lockhart, Robert Purcell, Deborah Vogel, and Justin Warsham. Executive producers Jeff Abraham, Dean Chamberlain, and Therese Tucker. Final cut and sound mixing by Candace Goldman. Today's cast includes Elvis Medina, Larry Morgan, Ramona Floyd, Charles Hubble, Shannon Farron, John Beard, Amari Williams, Justin Warsham, Wayne Resnick, Gina Sanchez, Chris Welton, Grace Sue, Tim Assall, Carolina Keach, Gary Hoffman, Tanis Peranto, and Sean Taylor Corbett. Once again, thank you to Lisa Fields, Warren Carter, and Neil Saavedra for their insights. Today's Kickstarter support shoutouts go to John Kleekamp, Mike Huckman, Tyler Roth, Mike Luciano, Beth Wells, Sherry Phoenix, Jeff Troit, Jason Jepson, Adrian Wallahan, John and Chris Jones, John Lockhart, Linda and John Piscatelli, and Linda Swanser. Please rate and review the podcast, and you can email me about anything at topstorytonightpodcast@gmail.com. We will be back in the spring with Easter, Meet Jesus, Pilate, Caiaphas, Mary Magdalene, Peter, and Herod's son Antipas, who was a good friend of a first century podcaster named Joe Roganis.
So Herod, I hear Jesus was taken before Pilate, the Roman governor here, to be crucified. But once Pilate found out he was from Nazareth, he shipped him over to you to decide what to do with him.
I was really looking forward to meeting Jesus. I was a big fan of his cousin, John the Baptist, may he rest in peace.
You beheaded John.
Yeah, well, my wife hated him, and happy wife, happy life.
As the greatest story ever told is told in a whole new way.
When the cost of everything is rising, your savings rate should be too. That's why at General Electric Credit Union, our Thrive High Yield Savings Account earns you 14 times the rate of an average savings account, while giving you convenient access to your money through debit cards, checks, and our network of 100,000 free ATMs. Live or work in the tri-state? This account and General Electric Credit Union are for you. Insured by NCUA, membership eligibility required.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.